Hi, this is Pastor Chris, and welcome to Strength for Today from Living Hope Baptist Church in Geneva, New York. Today is Monday, June 8th, 2020. Have you ever noticed how much of life involves choosing sides? Teams, sides, favorites, all these seem to seem an instinctive part of our experience. When we were little kids, we played games and shouted things like, "I'll be on this side, you'll be on that side." Then we got to school and we were placed on teams, not just for soccer and dodgeball, but for reading and math and spelling. Most of my experience in school did not involve a choice in this matter. A teacher would assign me a side, or the teacher would choose captains who would then choose teammates. But now that I'm older, I see that a lot of the decisions in life involve our choosing of which team we will be a part of. Consider politics, for instance. Let's say national politics in the United States. Now, there's a topic fraught with danger, isn't there? But I'm not interested here in specifically what your politics are. I just want to observe that you have political opinions. And even if you say you have no political opinions, you do, as apathy or indifference to politics is in itself a political opinion. If you are an adult in the United States, not a felon, you have a political opportunity and a right to participate in voting. So the necessity of choosing is actually forced upon you. This necessity was not of your own making. It came simply with your citizenship in the United States. But now, within that sphere, you have been given great latitude, a freedom of choice that is dazzling. First, you must choose whether to vote or not, habitually or sporadically. Second, you must choose whether to ponder the issues you're voting on. And third, you must choose ultimately how you will vote. The nature of voting is choosing or aligning oneself with one position or another, isn't it? A side. In the United States, the availability of sides or positions seems almost endless. All sorts of platforms vie for our vote, from those on the far left to those on the far right. But one must choose. And so we do. We cast our vote, saying yes to the one and no to all the others. I think the decisions or choices we make along the way are self-reinforcing. We cast a vote, and then we seem to seek reasons why our vote was good or wise. Few of us want to think that we cast a stupid ballot. This, in turn, tips the scales, I think, toward voting a similar way in the next election. If this does indeed happen, it would suggest that the tendency in voting would be towards greater polarization over a lifetime, if indeed the tendency remains unchecked by other forces, which I think often it is, such as environmental or social upheavals or new perspectives gained through experience. So in America, people tend to choose a side, Republican or Democrat, and then they stick with it. But it's not just politics. How about sports? Oh, I don't mean the actual playing of sports. No, I'm talking about how we choose a team we're going to root for. How many times have you been asked, "Which team do you like?" or "Which team is yours?" And so again, you are here forced with a choice of sides. Will you align yourself with one side or another? Or will you back away and claim disinterest or ignorance? By the way, the Seattle Seahawks are the best NFL team. Go Hawks! Yes. Really, in the end, most of the time, it doesn't matter which side we choose. If the Seahawks win, that's great. But if they lose, it's not a huge deal. Politics, they may be more important, maybe. But there is one area in which we are forced to make a choice of eternal import. It is a forced choice, and our eternity rests on making the right choice. That area is religion, and the choice is which God you will serve. Or another way to say it is, whose team will you be on? Just as there are many political options facing you, there are many religious options. Let's just name a few of the biggies, like Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, and Hinduism. That's just five religions right there, competing for your allegiance. And despite the comments of the uninformed that they're not all the same, you know, and they're not all leading to the same destination. If they were all the same, they wouldn't have different names, different doctrines, different practices, but they all do. They are each different, and each claims to present the true nature of the seen and the unseen world. So you cannot choose them all unless you are choosing to go with the Baha'i fave or a toothless amalgam of your own creation. No, you must choose one or something else. Some people have looked at this choice and said, no, I'm not interested. I choose not to choose. But as the philosopher William James effectively proved in his article, The Will to Believe, that non-choice is a choice in itself, a choice that activates the same consequences as every other choice. So as he observes, such a choice is living and active and genuine. I encourage you to read this essay. All right, let's lay aside the philosophy for now. Let me ask you bluntly, which side have you chosen? Have you chosen one? If not, I encourage you to consider the options and choose a side. Which God will you serve? Now, let me throw in one other thing quickly. Perhaps you've heard and responded. I heard somebody respond this way. Well, I have no God. I don't believe in God. I don't serve any God. Well, if that is the case for you, then I will simply point out the obvious that you've declared yourself your God. You've enthroned yourself as the absolute monarch of your life, the final judge. So again, I ask, which God will you serve? Today, we turn to Psalm 5, another Psalm of David. In this psalm, David declares his allegiance to Yahweh. He proclaims publicly that he chooses, has chosen, and will continue to choose Yahweh's side. I say Yahweh because I want to be as specific as possible in identifying the God to whom David submits. David himself uses the word Yahweh. This is not some sort of generic God that he's speaking about, nor is this God a construct of David's imagination. In referring to his God as Yahweh, David identifies his God as the God who called Abraham, who wrestled with Jacob, who delivered Israel from Egypt, and who entered into a suzerain vassal treaty with Israel at Mount Sinai. This God is the rightful king, the rightful high king of Israel, who proves his presence with signs and wonders, and who reveals himself to be supreme over all the other so-called gods that men worship. So David aligns himself with the greatest of all truth claims, that the true God, the one true God, is Yahweh. And David stakes everything he has on him, on Yahweh. Well, let's look at the first couple verses. It reads, "Give ear to my words, O Yahweh, consider my groaning. Give heed to the voice of my cry, my King and my God, for to you I will pray." Notice here that David, the king of Israel, calls Yahweh his king and his God. David sees himself as a subordinate to Yahweh, even while he sits on the throne of Israel. This is a statement of David's belief in Yahweh's absolute authority. The nation, indeed the world, is Yahweh's, and David serves simply at his pleasure. And so it is on this basis, the fact that he is Yahweh's, the fact that he is on Yahweh's team, and the fact that he is seeking to do Yahweh's will, that David asks Yahweh to hear his petition. When I read these verses, I wonder if we see reflected here some of David's experience as a king. Did people come before him and ask for help? Well, surely his subjects did. And what would be the basis of their requests? You can hear them, can't you? "We are your people, O King David, part of your nation. Please help us. We come to you as those in need, turning to the one, you, O King, who has the authority and the power to help us." You can almost hear it, can't you? So David appeals to his king Yahweh, and he says, "My voice you shall hear in the morning, O Yahweh. In the morning I will direct it to you, and I will look up." David is saying that he takes his subordination to Yahweh seriously. It is not lip service. He will not call him his king and God and then ignore him and do as he pleases. No, rather, first thing in the morning, as the day begins, he will turn to Yahweh and seek his guidance. This demonstrates submission, humility, and dependence. In his actions, David declares Yahweh his king and God. The psalm now changes tone and declares the holiness of Yahweh. David writes, "For you are not a God who takes pleasure in wickedness, nor shall evil dwell with you. The boastful shall not stand in your sight. You hate all workers of iniquity. You shall destroy those who spread falsehood. Yahweh abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man." Well, these words may make readers today uncomfortable. We seem to want a God who is always gentle and kind, winking away sin with an understanding eye. And sometimes we say that silly comment, "Oh, God will forgive, that's his job." And in all this, we fail to see and understand that God's chief end is his own glory and holiness. Yahweh is supreme, and if he is worthy of worship, his glory is the chief end of his actions. And he is indeed worthy of worship because he is utterly holy. He is pure moral light, and in him there is no darkness, none at all. David declares Yahweh's absolute holiness and then declares the necessary manifestation of that holiness, wrath against sin. It is easy sometimes for us to forget that God's wrath is continually, presently being poured out upon the earth, but so indeed it is. See Romans 1. Even as his holiness is unvarying, his righteous indignation at sin is unvarying. This is why Jesus said he did not come to judge the world. The world stands and stood condemned already. He came rather to save and to bear the full wrath of God's holiness on the cross in the place of those who would put their trust in him. David continues then by saying that he dares to approach Yahweh not on the basis of his own righteousness, but on the basis of Yahweh's great mercy and his, that is, Yahweh's righteousness extended to him. We read, "But as for me, I will come into your house in the multitude of your mercy. In fear of you, I will worship toward the temple of your holiness. Lead me, O Yahweh, in your righteousness because of my enemies. Make your way straight before my face." We hear here David refers to his enemies. He comes before his king and his God as a subordinate, who has then taken his place on Yahweh's team. Inasmuch, then, as David has aligned himself with Yahweh, his enemies are Yahweh's enemies. In seeking Yahweh's glory and honor, in going forward in Yahweh's righteousness, David encountered opposition from those who ultimately were rebelling against Yahweh. And given the presupposition that Yahweh is the true holy God, the only true God, David views the rebellion with the perspective of God's righteous and rightful indignation. And so he identifies their acts a rebellion. He says, "For there is no uprightness in their mouth. Their inward part is destruction. Their throat is an open tomb. They flatter with their tongue." David says, basically, look, they've chosen their side. They've arrayed themselves against you, O Yahweh. And so David asks his king to act. He says, "Pronounce them guilty, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. Cast them out and in the multitude of their transgressions, for they have rebelled against you." Notice that David's plea for justice does not rest here on his enemies' actions against him. Rather, it rests on the observation that these people have rebelled against Yahweh himself. The psalm's tone then changes again as David focuses for the final two verses on the blessings coming to those on the Lord's side. He says, "But let all those rejoice who put their trust in you. Let them ever shout for joy because you cover them. Let those also who love your name be joyful in you, for you, O Yahweh, will bless the righteous. With favor you will surround him as with a shield." For those on the Lord's side, joy, protection, and blessing. There it is, a clear choice. There is one true God, Yahweh. He is holy, sovereign, and almighty. Those who call on his name in humble adoration and trust will be blessed with his righteousness through Jesus Christ. They will have joy, safety, and blessing. But those who rebel, those who refuse to bend the knee, they will remain beneath the wrath of God and suffer eternal destruction. Which side will you choose? I will leave you today with Peter's admonition from his first letter. He writes, "Be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you." I encourage you today and every day, choose Yahweh's side, and you will always be able to say, "The best is yet to come." God bless.